This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Have Code Academy.
Doc, we had a little technical issue there. Why don't we just start over again? We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. You're good. Go right ahead.
Okay, we're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology.
Not only was it K through 12 schools, as you just mentioned, but this also bill would have forced.
Now, I'm still hearing things on the headset.
Andrew is working on that.
So, this week was a very big week because we had to Microsoft. The Code Academy got a major redesign. Oh, now everything is working.
Everything is right.
Everything
yes.
is working now. So now I can just sit back and relax. I'm going to talk today about how you can reduce the number of ads that show up on your Gmail account when you're looking at Gmail.
This would be good.
And we'll briefly review what is being called the digital arms race. It's the new Cold War version of arming up and getting ready to go against what's going on. And Hulu, and this Hulu is now blocking VPN users.
Really?
I hate to hear this because I listened to Netflix when I traveled to India using VPN, and they're trying to crack down on these people listening to their media content in other countries. So I hate to hear that. And, of course, it was a huge, huge mailbag.
How big was it?
Giant.
Huge.
Huge.
Huge. Massive.
Yeah. Where's Mr. Big Voice here?
He got lost. He's in the
Mr. Big. Okay.
Hang on. He'll be right with us.
We're going to have to.
He was smacking Andrew. There he is.
There he is, finally. We go, Mr.
Well,
Big Voice.
Part of him, at least.
He's out on the union picket line outside, and,
He resents that comment.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Okay, there he is.
Now we
go.
Can really
That's
start.
Good. There you go. We got an email from Jim across the console. My daughter will be studying in London this July.
Studying is in quotes.
Studying, yes, studying. She'll be studying the pub scene.
Oh, that's right. She will be 21 in July.
You only have to be 18 there, though, so she could have gone 3 years ago. She'll be taking her iPhone 4 with her. Now, please tell me what you do when you travel abroad to keep your cell costs down. I really don't have time for a third or fourth time part job to pay her phone bill. Thank you. By the way, we have AT&T. Well,
yes.
Let me just sort of give an overview here. If you happen to have Verizon, your iPhone 4 does not have a SIM card, so you basically don't have any luck. You just have to buy a cheap mobile phone, which you can usually get for about $20, and then you can put a SIM card in it after you get there, which a lot of folks that I travel with who cannot unlock their mobile phone, that's what they do. Now, if she has a GSM carrier like AT&T or T-Mobile, which she had AT&T, there's a SIM card installed. Now, unfortunately, the SIM card is locked by the carrier, which means that you cannot put in a SIM card from another carrier. And AT&T has been particularly troublesome about unlocking
their
phones.
That wasn't the word you used off the air.
No, that was not the word. There's somebody at somebody who travels with me to India at Stratford University, my VP of Academic Affairs. He has an AT&T iPhone. So I went there to India with my Verizon iPhone. Verizon unlocked it.
Uh-huh.
I put in a local SIM card and I was good to go. But Jim,
yes,
could not get his. This was Jim of Stratford.
Jim from Stratford
could not get AT&T to unlock his cell phone, no matter how hard he tried. So he had to buy something different. So they will not unlock AT&T will not unlock the phone if it's currently under contract. However, once the contract is over, you've technically bought the phone, and there have been lawsuits against AT&T that is forcing them to unlock the phones after the contract expires. So you can do that now. And so, but it may be that I think there's been a huge amount of pressure on AT&T over this. So I would advise you to call AT&T to complain. Say if they don't take care of you, you're switching everything to Verizon.
You know, they've been pretty good with me in the past because I have a number of devices on the plan. So maybe they'll work with me.
And you know, it's extremely easy for them to unlock it because whenever you activate your phone, it logs onto an Apple server and it checks the AT&T account as to whether it's been authorized or whether it's been unlocked. So they can simply log on to the AT&T servers, and they can unlock your phone in just a minute or two.
Right.
When I was with Verizon, they unlocked the phone while I was still on the phone call with them. So they can do it very easily. Now, what they were telling my friend at Stratford was that we couldn't do it against the law. They gave at least four different lies why they couldn't do it. And since I'd already done it, I knew it wasn't true. But I think... I think the pressure is on, and I would certainly advise you to do that. Now, once you get there, assuming you can get a phone that has unlocked, you can slip in the SIM card, and so you the iPhone 4 is going to have what they call a nano SIM. It's a little bit smaller SIM.
Right.
The iPhone 5 has a micro SIM, which is smaller yet. So you're going to want to buy a SIM card there, and in London. Most of the places, the SIM cards are free, and then you just have to, what they say, top them up and add money
to them. Add money as you use it?
They're all prepaid.
Okay.
And so you could go to some, you know, I sort of was checking because I spent a lot of time in Ireland, which is not the same as London.
No, not
now. And a lot of people recommended, you know, that T-Mobile was good, that you could actually get them to... You could actually get, you know, work with T-Mobile, add about $10 or so to that, top it up, and then you could make local phone calls there. They recommended using some of these voice over IP services, and you might talk to T-Mobile because you can log into a local number there, and it's a voice over IP system, and you can call back to the United States for like a few pence. And so it's fairly easy. And so it's an IP call going through this server. And it turns out that T-Mobile links into some of those servers very conveniently. That's why people liked it. Now, somebody else I just checked had just returned from the UK, and they got an orange prepaid SIM card. And it came with a 100 megabyte data plan, which is nice.
How much did they pay for it?
I mean, the SIM card, they had to put up 10 pounds on the card.
Uh-huh.
So they put 10 pounds on the card, and that gave them data, 100 megabytes of data for a month. And then they were there for a little bit more than a month, and they had another 5 pounds top up, and that's all they had to use. They liked the data plan because it let them use Google Maps while they were going around, and
so,
it made a big difference.
So the name of this is an orange SIM card? Is that like a brand name?
Yeah, orange prepaid SIM card.
Huh.
And so,
but you got to buy it there. You can't buy it here before you leave.
You can't buy it. It has to be mailed to a local address.
Uh huh.
So if she has friends over there, she could order and have it mailed to their house. But you can just go in and pick them up. It's pretty well
interesting.
It's pretty well set up. But I actually kind of like that's what I got when I was in Ireland. I got the SIM card with the data plan. And what was interesting. Even after my minutes ran out on my voice, the data plan still worked. And so, I mean, it's not fast data plan, but I could get my emails, and in particular, I could use Google Maps.
Uh-huh.
And you see, without Google Maps, without data, you can't use Google Maps.
Right.
And without data, you can't use Siri.
Well, she doesn't use Siri. That's your thing.
She doesn't use Siri?
No, she doesn't use Siri.
Okay, well, it's okay.
So now if she gets the orange prepaid card, then calling back and forth to the United States, how would that work?
Okay, here's the deal. If she calls to the U.S., this is why you want a voiceover IP server. If she calls back to the U.S., out-of-country calls are going to be expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But in-country calls are dirt cheap. So if she connects to a voiceover IP server, she can call back to the United States for like a few pence a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
her friends probably are going to know. And now not all the cards connect to the voice over IP servers. The reason this one person recommended T-Mobile connect to a voice over IP server. very easily.
So she could get a T-Mobile card over there.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. All right.
She could get a T-Mobile card. But, and I'm also thinking that her friends are going to have some really good ideas on this when she gets over there.
This is something they're having all these pre-meetings before they go over there with an advisor talking about logistical stuff like bank accounts and how to do things like the phone. And she was really confused about the phone thing.
So the thing is, if you don't get data plan, I like data for Google Maps. But what I would do, because I didn't want to eat up all my data with big downloads from my emails, I would not download emails with the data plan,
right.
And I'd wait till I was on Wi-Fi, and I'd get all of my emails with Wi-Fi, and I would just use the data plan when I wanted to really do a Google Maps, or if I had to send an email, because 100 megabytes is not that much data.
It's not a whole lot.
It's no.
No. Well, so in terms of the data situation, because everybody in the family has an iPhone,
mm-hmm.
so if she wants to text back and forth, does that become an iMessage? And is that
it's an iMessage and it's data, and so that's
so it'll
great.
Come off the data plan.
That is great because the text messages would be expensive. They might charge you 25 cents a text message. Now the other interesting thing, incoming calls are free for her,
so you can call her.
Yeah, but then they charge you a boatload. So they surcharge the person calling over there.
Oh, I see.
Has a surcharge that can be as much as 25 cents a minute. But she doesn't pay anything.
Okay. And if she calls, it comes off of her
SIM card. Off of her SIM card.
And it doesn't cost the person on the
other
end.
Right. And then incoming text messages don't cost her anything. That's the way they do it over in Europe. Incoming calls and text messages are free. Outgoing are more expensive. That's why it's more expensive to call a cell phone in say, UK than it is to call a landline.
Uh-huh.
Because the landline doesn't have the surcharge on it.
Right.
So
when she... Providing that we can get the phone unlocked and we buy mm-hmm. her, probably it sounds like the T-Mobile card is going to be the best thing to get mm-hmm. for her. Is that's what you would suggest?
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll be the easiest situation for her to figure out then.
That's right.
Will she then have a different phone number when she puts a different SIM card in it?
As soon as she puts in the new SIM card, it's a new phone number.
Interesting.
It's just... You got the new phone.
Will it
number.
Be one of these like international? It'll be like a more than 10 digits?
You'll have to use the area code for UK.
Uh-huh.
And then it'll just have their long string of numbers with the country code
uh-huh.
for UK, and so she'll have that number. Now what I have done, I have to say, Viber uses data, and so I've actually used Viber with the data plan,
mm-hmm.
and so the nice thing about Viber, if she has Viber. Is that when she's at the hotel with Wi-Fi, if you call her old U.S. number
right.
on Viber, her cell phone will ring, and you can talk to her, and as though the number is active, so
that
she could actually
look into.
So it, when she's on Wi-Fi, she could call you on Viber, and it would just be a piece of cake. And
Skype will work in London, right?
Yeah, Skype works.
We
yeah.
could possibly get into that.
Skype works. The nice thing about Viber, it automatically wakes up the phone. So even if she doesn't have Viber open, if you call her Viber number
uh-huh.
and she's got data, her phone rings just like you were calling her regular number.
Pretty cool.
So I use Viber a lot when I'm traveling.
You know what I'm really worried about is because you and I have actually taken the SIM card out of this phone.
Yes.
I'm concerned about her losing her AT&T SIM card over there.
Okay, now what they have... Ask them for a little plastic case for holding SIM cards.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't ask them for that, they'll tape your SIM card to the back of your phone, which is a bad way to do it.
Exactly.
So they have these little plastic cases, and you just pop the SIM card in it. And so then I have a little what I do. The new SIM card comes in a little bag. I put my old SIM card in the bag, and then I put it in a special place in my suitcase.
She needs to find a special place.
Yes. Okay, we got an email from Feroz in Fredericksburg. Dear Doc and Jim, I do a lot of driving. I would like to listen to audio books in the car. We have iPhones. What are the best options? Thanks, Feroz in Fredericksburg. Well, sounds like a long commute. Well,
yeah.
Feroz, you've got a couple of options. You can simply buy audio CDs. This is probably the low-tech option. And you just pop them into the
What's a CD?
I know. You pop them into the CD player of your car. I'm sure you've got it. And then you can play your audiobook. And that, I mean, that's sort of nice because you can share the CD, you can pass it around. So that is the that's the old low-tech option. Now you got other higher-tech options using smartphones or tablets. Now these all play through apps, and then you can connect your smartphone or your tablet to your car audio system, either through the Bluetooth connection mm-hmm. or through the USB connection. And that's quite good. Now, I've got also, and now the I've got, and then what you can do is, for instance, you can download applications which handle audiobooks on your iPhone. Like for instance, Kindle has an application you can download onto your iPhone, and then you can you've got the Kindle app, and then you can buy your audiobooks through Amazon. Amazon also has another product that's gotten great reviews, Audible. Audible you can download to an iPhone or you can download it to an Android, and then you can then listen to any of your you know iBooks any of your books any of your audiobooks through your iPhone or your iPad and play them through the car. Now, if you use the Kindle application and if you also have like a Kindle Fire, the nice thing about Kindle, it synchronizes across all the Kindle devices. So if you're listening to the audiobook and you're also reading it on the Kindle Fire, say, as you turn the pages in the audiobook, it synchronizes with the Kindle Fire. So then you open up the book, which is all text, you're on the right page. So they're synchronized across devices. I've got friends that use that. Uh-huh. I've also got friends that use Audible. And if you now the other way you could do it is you could just, if you want to stick strictly with the Apple iTunes ecosystem, you can buy your audiobooks through iTunes. You just go to iTunes, download an audiobook, and then at the bottom of the iTunes, there's going to be an audiobook tab. You can click on that. You'll see all your audiobooks listed, so you can do that. But the trouble is the iBooks, audiobooks don't synchronize with the textbooks, and you don't get any, they're really viewed as separate products, so they're not integrated quite as well on the Apple iTunes. Well, look who's here.
Look who's here. I think we need to...
Patty, don't start to walk in.
Hi, folks. This is David Burke.
Don't stop. Make it pop. DJ, blow my speakers up.
You can start talking now, sir.
Yes.
You've been duly introduced. You like that?
You guys must be dying.
I spent
a lot... put me on.
Oh, yeah.
Are you guys dying?
No, we're not dying.
You're not dying?
Okay. No.
So you're,
no,
we're,
just,
right
we're just lighted. We're just lit up down here, Dave.
Yeah, you are lit up, Doc. That's very nice. You're wearing that...
That's not coffee in there.
You're wearing that Spartan 300's promotional jacket.
I am. That's right. You know, you know, I wear this. I wear this whenever I fly the drone. Yeah. Whenever I
that's
fly
his,
the drone.
That's his aviator jacket.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm over. Exactly. I brought the drone here today to see if I could check
you
out
did?
The construction. Yeah, I have the drone in the trunk.
Oh, that's good.
I always have the drone.
I'm always ready to fly the drone at the drop of a hat.
Doc,
Dave.
I'm waiting for that call from the city to come bail you out of jail one of these days. Yeah, for flying your drone. You have no idea what the regulations are, do you?
Oh, no, I know they're coming.
That didn't answer my question, sir.
That's a no.
That's a no. Okay, I got you. I'll be standing by for that call.
Well,
anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, let's put it this way. No, nobody's come up to me with a badge to inform me that I violated any regulations.
We don't need no stinking badges. Okay?
That's right.
Hey, Doc, I'm hearing this rumor. Maybe you can shed some light on this, that the Internet will be dead soon. Are you hearing that story? No, really. I'm serious.
Wait, what?
The Internet will be dead soon.
Is this breaking news?
I don't know. Some people are saying this because of other medias that are taking over. I don't know. You know these things. That's why
so
I come to you.
Well, now what do you mean? Internet will be dead. Now you got you've got the World Wide Web,
which sits
on top of the Internet infrastructure.
Right.
So I think you're talking about maybe some of the World Wide Web data searches.
Yes.
It's not the Internet is dead.
No, not the Internet.
The web is dead.
The web is dead as we know it.
So the World Wide Web is actually an application, the browser, that sits on top of the Internet, and the Internet connects everything. And so in the old days, I'll tell you, I think when you wanted to
say... You know, the professor's podium just rolled out of the wall.
It did, yes.
Here we go.
So in the old days, when you wanted to, say, buy a pair of Nike shoes, you just go to the Internet, and you would search for Nike shoes.
W-W-W.
You'd find them, and then you'd go there, and then you'd find something.
Yeah.
Well, now, everything is applications.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, if I want to... If I'm on Amazon...
Right.
And I want to buy a new razor, for instance. I just go to Amazon and I search Amazon. It and then gives me the razor. I'm not on any browser.
Right.
So it's an application search.
So we're cutting the middleman out.
Middleman's getting cut out. And for instance, when I do research for TikTok,
right.
I don't search the web anymore. I use Flipbook. I've put all of the keywords that I like for tech, all the stuff that
Flipbook,
all the stuff that makes is
help
interesting.
Help us, uneducated here. So, I've never heard of
the unwashed.
So what it does, it makes a personal magazine for me, which only has stuff in it that I like.
Oh,
so here it is. So here's my Flipbook.
Okay,
and I just flip through articles.
All the stuff you like.
All the stuff that has been identified according to my keywords.
49ers cheerleaders, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go. See, I'm flipping through. This is all research that Flipbook has done for me. Is ready for Tech Talk.
That's good stuff.
So now the thing is, I don't even surf the web anymore. Flipbook searches the web for me.
I rest my case. Isn't that what I just said, Jimbo?
The interwebs is dying.
So the web,
it's application-based.
But you could use Flipbook and put all the wacky stuff that you like in it, and you would get a Dave Wacky magazine that would just come right up for you every single morning.
Dave Wacky magazine.
I love this.
That's right.
That's gold. That's pure gold we're listening to.
That's technology gold.
That's
you
gold.
See radio gold, it's tech
gold.
That's right.
That's right. You come to the right place for knowledge. That's what I did.
So now what's happening and why people are talking about it is it's all about monetization. How are you going to get ads?
Right.
Okay, so now I got these Flipbook articles. Mm-hmm. There are no ads.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I do a Google search, it has ads that are on the side.
Sure.
So I'm not seeing any Google ads.
Mm-hmm.
And so Google is a little bit worried that these applications are going to cut them out of the ad business.
Of course it's going to cut them out, Doc, because that way they can't text parse all your emails and figure out what you like and send that crud to you.
Dave.
Sorry, Jim.
This is why.
I have my hand on the dumb button.
This is why they created Android.
Oh, here we go.
You will never, ever avoid ads when you are in the Google ecosystem.
Oh, I know. I don't do a Gmail account. I don't do any of that. They text parse your emails, do they?
They do.
And they sell that information.
No, they actually deliver targeted ads to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what they do. Now, what I do is I like Chrome, but I don't log in.
Oh.
See, they want you to log in.
Of course.
And they want you to log in to YouTubes and log into everything.
And what's your soul?
And so I don't log in to any of these systems.
No. No,
and
no.
But I do like some of the features. Yeah. And Google is actually, sometimes I'll use Google if I want to search for things. But, you know, I've got my Flipbook. If I want to buy stuff, I'm on Amazon. So I've really gone more to applications.
Really?
And that is the movement now.
The movement
is to applications, and that's why they're saying the World Wide Web could be dead. But the Internet's not dead.
We've got a news flash for you guys. I'm going out and buy a mini today, a mini iPad.
Mini iPad?
Oh.
I've only had three of these, and I'm finally going to stick with it.
You're going to stick with it.
You keep giving them away, right?
Well, I don't know. I see the reason now.
Okay, are you going to get one that's got the telephone connection, like the 4G connection?
No, I don't want that. I just want for data, that's all.
You want like just the Wi-Fi version?
You just want the Wi-Fi version.
I don't want to play
it. I like it so much, I'm thinking about buying two, so I have two.
Why?
I use it for all kinds of stuff
at work.
Oh, okay. Yeah, exactly. For stereo. That's it.
Well,
okay. Dang, you're a genius.
So if you get the data one, it costs you another couple hundred bucks, and you got to pay $10 a month for the data plan when you add it in.
No, if you do Wi-Fi, you don't have to buy any
data. Yeah, exactly, right.
You don't have to buy anything.
Really?
Yeah, but see, the thing is, if you've got data, then you can use it. You can sit in Central Park, and you can surf the web.
And watch the pigeons.
Sooner or later,
New York will have a Wi-Fi thing in Central Park. We can just, clam onto that.
Why not? I'm surprised they don't already.
I'm sure they do.
So many other places do.
I know. It's crazy.
Now, I could
You're
probably
the one that taught me how to use other people's units.
The one who tries to keep people from using it taught you how to do it. Would you call that war wagoning?
What was that?
Now, see, I could give you some apps,
wagon.
Dave, that would show you how to, crack. Crack Wi-Fi encryption so you could log on. So you could really break the law. And you could log on to Wi-Fi systems that are
this
encrypted.
This is where I walk out of the room when he says break the law.
So the thing is that, those are quite available.
Okay.
Right. This is why Wi-Fi is really not that secure.
Really?
No. Now, the other thing that I do...
You know one thing I'm shocked about with you, Doc, so far? Because normally you're on the cutting edge of everything. He's always the kid with a new toy.
Yes,
for anybody else. Where are the Google glasses? Where are they?
Well, I considered buying some for $1,500.
Well, you got a drone. I don't know why you don't have the Google glasses. Are they not worth it?
I'm waiting for like version 2 to come out of the Google glasses.
2.0.
I don't want people to call me a glass hole. People that wear these Google glasses are glass holes, I've got to be.
Okay, I'm done. Okay, I'm tapped out. I can't top that now.
I got another 35 minutes to go.
I can't top that. That was so good. That was gold, Doc.
Have a lovely evening.
Yes,
tip your server.
Hey, when you do bring the Google glasses in, whatever version or whenever you feel like it. Please make sure I know I'm coming down here. I want to see the deal.
You know what I'm waiting for? The Google Glass contacts.
Get out of here. Stop.
They've got
really?
Them. Yeah, that's the next thing. And it just follows your eye around, and it connects wirelessly. The Google Glass contacts. Yeah. That's what I'm waiting for.
Because then
you can be a glass hole and nobody knows it.
Exactly. Wow.
We're going to limit the number of times you can say that.
I know. Okay, do I have any exit music?
He's pushing the envelope.
Do I have any exit music? I know I got intro music.
No. Yeah, I need to work on that.
I just got to slime out of the back. Okay.
Yeah, he's got to.
Doc, it's been fun.
Okay. Thank you, David.
Bring the Google Glasses.
Okay, I will.
He's going to need a truck. He's got the drone, the Google Glasses. What else should he bring in?
I've always known he was a glass hole.
Yeah.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks, David. So, Doc, where do we go after that?
Let's have another letter. We got an email from Hester Christopher. Hi, guys. Uh-huh. Long-time listener, first-time questioner. For years, I've forwarded malicious emails to this address, spam@uce.gov. But recently they've been returned as address unavailable. Is this address no longer active? And if so, where is there a new address? Finally, is this emailing this spam productive or not? I mean, do they really investigate stuff and what's going on with this? Thanks, Hester Christopher. Well, Hester, I actually checked the blogs, and some people have talked about bounced emails from spam@uce.gov, and then a few days later they would send it in and it wouldn't bounce. Now, I went in and sent two spam letters to them this morning, and they went right through, spam@uce.gov. Now, I also went to the FTC website, and they're still listing this as an active program.
Yeah, they are.
So, I still think it's active, although some people occasionally do get a bounce. So, they must have something wrong with their servers. Now, as to what they do, this service simply consolidates all these email complaints, and if they get a whole bunch of complaints of a particular type, they'll consolidate those, and they will send over a request to FTC for investigation.
Huh.
So it's just there's really a data consolidation, and then that will lead to an FTC investigation. Now, you can also request to be taken off the spam list. You know, at the bottom it says you can remove spam. Usually I don't do that, but you can do that. And the FTC says that if you've requested to be removed from a mailing list you haven't been removed, you can actually go directly to the FTC and file a complaint directly. And you just simply can Google FTC, complaint, and they've got a whole complaint system that you can file. By the way, I ran across this. Now we're starting to get spam messages to our cell phones as text messages.
Yep.
You can forward your spam text message to 7726.
No kidding.
Which is spam spelled out on a keyboard.
Uh-huh. And that goes to the FTC?
And that goes to the FTC to turn them in. I just discovered that
this
morning.
Interesting and important information.
Yeah. So 7726, which on the keyboard spells spam. We got an email from Arnie in Davisonville. Hi, Dr. Schertz. Don't know if you've featured Robert Noyce yet. A little history for today. Did you know that what happened on April 25th, 1961, Robert Noyce was granted a patent for the integrated circuit. Thanks, Arnie in Davisonville. Well, Arnie, we have featured Robert Noyce, but this is a great suggestion.
Yeah.
And I may go back and talk about this story because this is the invention of the integrated circuit came after Bell Labs invented the transistor. It's a very compelling story. RCA thought, transistors were, a newfangled deal. They'd stick with their tubes. And the integrated circuit actually ended up being invented, the first one down at Texas Instruments. And then ultimately, we had the Intel system. It's a great, great story on how innovation, how disruptive technology changes things. I think I'll go back and feature that sometime, but in a broader context than just Robert Noyce.
Sure.
We got an email from Knock in Ohio.
Uh-oh, the Ohio people.
The Ohio crew. This is
With their pictures and stuff.
Yeah. Dear Doc and Jim, a couple of months ago, I bought a new laptop. It had Windows 8 pre-installed, but there were no disks supplied. Now, I searched the internet, and I looked for ISO files. That's the format for that. For if you've got a file that you want to write to a disk and make it bootable or something, it's called .ISO. Now, I looked all around the internet. I came across some ISOs. I came out in ISO files for Windows. I downloaded it, and I tried the setup. It seemed to work. It didn't even ask for a product key. So I don't know. I didn't know. Since I didn't really need to install, I exited from it. But the question is this the correct ISO, and is it taking the key, my product key, from my BIOS or from my registry? That would be great. Thanks, Knock in Ohio. Well, the key would not would be formed in your BIOS, Knock. It would be stored in your registry, so that's right. A small correction. Okay, Knock, you've got to be very careful here. There is no official download of Windows 8 in an ISO format. Now, you can go to the Windows Store and you can buy Windows and you can download it, but it's not an ISO. It's actually an executable that just installs on your machine. So what this actually means is that the Windows 8 ISO that you have downloaded is probably an illegal copy. You say, well, why would people do that? Because what they do is they take legitimate Windows. They add malware to them. They get people to download them. When you install them on your machine, you've got malware baked into your machine, and they've got a little malware robot there. So actually, the copy you've got is illegal, and it's also very dangerous. So I would say just dump that completely. Now, I know this is a problem, though, when you don't have any installation media for your machine. So the very first thing that I do when I get a machine is to create a complete image backup. And you save it somewhere, and then you make a backup of the backup. So, like what you could do is that you could actually, I mean, I've got Carbonite, which will do a complete image backup, or I have an external hard drive with a USB port. I got 1 terabyte for $65. You could back it up to that, and you could actually then back up the entire image of your hard drive, and there are a lot of backup image software options you can find on the web that really don't cost anything. Mm-hmm. And then once you've got that, that's equivalent to the install media. If it turns out that your machine crashes, you can always bring it back to the condition that it was at the moment you bought the machine. Very good question, but stay away from those illegal ISO files. Yep. Knock. We got an email from John in Alexandria. Dear Tech Talk, I have a Windows XP computer with a lot of downloaded programs. Now I want to install Windows 7 because, you know, XP has now been retired and I can't get updates. How do I do this in a simple way? A friend of mine told me I could get Windows 7 disk and just do an upgrade. What do you think? What's your recommendation? John in Alexandria. Well, Windows 7 will let you do an upgrade, John, from XP to Windows 7, but I don't recommend it. All these upgrades, I mean, they're really not that stable, and I prefer to have a clean install because these upgrades are fairly complicated. All the applications have to upgrade. It's a fairly complicated thing. You end up using more hard drive space than you need to, and I believe a clean install is always the best. So what I would do, I'd back up your machine using a free software like Macrium. Knock could use Macrium, too, to get an image of her machine. Macrium, go to www.macrium.com. Then after you've done that, you take your Windows disk and you install, but instead of having them set, you've got a choice between an update or a clean install. You select the clean install. What's going to happen? They're going to reformat your hard drive, and they're going to erase everything on it. So make certain that you got a good backup. Then you're going to have to reinstall all your applications. You'll need the disks and the license numbers for your applications. Now, remember, you cannot install the applications from the backup because it's not going to work. Those are backed up versions that were installed on a different operating system. Then once you've installed all your applications, you can take all your data files, your doc files, your spreadsheets, and all your data files, and you can restore them from the backup. Now, One more thing. You know, if you've got an XP machine, John, it's probably an old machine. And I'm telling you, prices have dropped dramatically. More than likely, the Windows 7 is not going to be very, very fast on your machine. It's probably underpowered. What I would upgrade and get a new machine. And the way to get really a great price is to get last year's model.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You get last year's model, it's going to be an order of magnitude better than what you've got, and it's going to be pretty cheap. And I would also get a 64-bit operating system. Then that way you could have more than 4 gigs of RAM. See, a 32-bit operating system can only address 4 gigs of RAM. But if you get a 64-bit operating system, you can put more RAM in it. And that allows you to handle bigger data files. It's a little faster. So kind of our standard configuration now at Stratford is 64-bit operating systems with 8 gigs of RAM. And that seems to be a good trade-off. Very good question, John. I hope you take up the advice on getting some new hardware. I think you'll be much happier, especially if you get a new laptop. They've got great laptops out there, and the prices have just come down dramatically. Listen, we love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu, and we'll cover your emails on the air.
Indeed, and we are on the air. It's Saturday morning. This is Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, on the web at techtalkonline.com and federalnewsradio.com. Stand by. More Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to feature Lawrence Larry Page.
Lawrence is what his mom called him.
Yeah,
Lawrence,
whenever Lawrence, late for dinner. Lawrence, get in here for dinner. Well, Lawrence Page, his friends call him Larry Page now, was born March 26th in East Lansing, Michigan. Larry Page, of course, is co-founder of Google, and he's the man who invented the page ranking system based on backlinks. Page attended Okemos Montessori School in Okemos, Michigan, from 1975 to 1979. His parents sent him there, I guess, when he was 2 years old. And he graduated from East Lansing High School in 1991. He holds a B.S. in Computer Science from the University of Michigan with honors, and an M.S. in Computer Science from Stanford University. And then he enrolled in the Ph.D. program. He dropped out of that program to start Google, by the way.
Jeez.
Yeah. After enrolling in the Ph.D. program at Stanford, Page considered exploring the mathematical properties of the web, and he wanted to use the link structure as a huge graph so he could graphically display what was being shown on the web. And in the process of looking at all this linkage structure on the web and displaying it as a graph, he got the idea that, pages that have more things linked to them might have a higher ranking. It was sort of like, academic papers that are referenced more have a higher ranking in academia.
Uh-huh.
So web pages that have more links have a higher ranking in the web world. So that was kind of the idea. So he started working on this project, and the project was called Back Rub.
Interesting.
I have no idea who named it that, Back Rub. But, of course, it was relating to back links.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of get that, but Back Rub, it was a code name. Now, he was soon joined by Sergey Brin, who was a fellow PhD student, and it was about 2 years ahead of him in the PhD program. In fact, Larry met Sergey at orientation. Sergey Brin was like showing the new PhD guys around the campus. He had been a PhD student for a couple of years. He showed them around, showed them where, you know, where all the places were, the classrooms, the dorms, the bars, everything that's important to a graduate student. And in the process, he and Larry and Sergey became good friends. So then he started writing a crawler, which would crawl around the web and start tabulating all of these backlinks. Now, at the time he was doing this, this was back in, like 1995. At that time, there were 10 million web pages. And there were, how many backlinks? Could be, hundreds of millions of backlinks, hundreds of millions of links to keep track of. So this was like a huge project, a huge data-gathering project that was way beyond the bounds of any particular student project. But, Larry didn't mind. He just kept working on it. And he began converting the backlink data gathered by Backrub's web crawler. He wrote this web crawler, just go around and calculate everything. He was eating up all this computer power at Stanford. And he started developing a database of links. So in August of 1996, he released the initial version of Google, but it was only available on the Stanford University website. So people go to the Stanford website, and they could do searches using his backlink model. And, it says, wow, this kind of works well. But it wasn't a complete map of the whole Internet. So Page and Brin raised about $1 million from friends and family to launch their startup. And they thought, Backrub is probably not a good name for,
no.
this startup. So then they renamed it Google. Google,
that seems to have caught on, right?
Yeah, that name caught on, and then Google is related to some very large number. If you look up the derivatives, it's a very large number, like 1 followed by 16 zeros. You might check on that, Jim.
I'm checking exactly on it as
what
we speak.
I'm launching my research department now to check on the details of Google. Now, in 1998, they formally founded Google. And Page and Brin, they couldn't decide who should be in charge, so they became co-presidents. But they were sort of running out of money, and they needed to get more money. So they went to the venture capital people there out there in Silicon Valley, and they said, "Look, we want money, but we're not going to give up control. We want to have absolute control. We want to have the majority of the voting rights." And these VC guys, they said, "You guys are crazy. We're not ever going to put money in your company if we don't have control." So they said, "Okay," and they just kept growing, and they just kept growing and growing. Pretty soon, the VC guy says, "Okay, all right, we'll give you money on your terms. You guys can still have control." And this was quite a reversal over the way the VCs normally operated. So they raised $25 million from Kleiner Perkins and Sequoia Capital, and they let Page and Brin retain control. Larry Page was really he's the brains behind it. He's the guy that invented the algorithm. He's the guy that really operated. For instance, he realized that one of the biggest costs was going to be servers, of course. You got to do all this thing. And so then he started looking at servers and the way that people were making data centers, and they would buy, they'd buy standard servers and they'd put them in a rack and they'd rack them up. And he started looking at the servers. He said, "Well, actually, these servers that we're buying, they got a lot of stuff that we don't even need." He said, "For instance, they've got an on-off switch." He said, "You never turn them off. You put them in, you never turn them off."
Mm-hmm.
So he just started eliminating all the superfluous stuff. And he was able to reduce the power consumption, get rid of all this extra stuff, make them much smaller. And he was able to pack 1,500 servers in the same space that the competitive search companies could only put in 50 servers. And so he was able to scale by a factor of 30 and reduce power consumption. So this allowed Google to serve up search results faster than the other than the competition, because they can actually have this very, very efficient data center. And so, you know, Larry Page was sort of one of the first guys in this thing. Now, the trouble is Page is controlling. He wants everything done right. He does not believe in delegation. He does not believe in mid-managers. He believes all engineers should report directly to the CEO.
Yikes.
Okay, now this is not a scalable system.
No.
So these, so Kleiner and Perkins and Sequoia, Klein, Perkins, Sequoia Capital, they said, okay, what have we done here? We've given this guy control. And see, when they gave him the money, they gave him voting rights control, and he agreed in principle to allow an adult CEO to come in and run the company. He agreed in principle. And then he said, well, you know, when I signed the deal for the $25 million, I agreed with that. But now I think it's a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be CEO. And, of course, Sergey had all the voting rights. So these VC guys, they said, okay, what are we going to do now? They said, you know, Larry, we'll let you talk to some CEOs to see what you think. So they had him talk to Steve Jobs. They had him talk to different CEOs around Silicon Valley. And he said, okay, I'll agree to bring in a CEO, but if it's Steve Jobs.
Okay, right.
And they said, well, you're not going to get Steve Jobs.
No, he's got something to do right now.
He's happy at Apple. He's not going to come and work for Google. So,
and Apple was his thing.
So then they looked around some more, and they finally found this guy, Eric Schmidt, who was the CEO of Novell and Novell Servers. And they convinced, they thought, okay, this Eric Schmidt would be okay. Everybody kind of agreed to it except Larry. So they brought Eric Schmidt on as chairman of the board, but Larry Page was erratic. For instance, what happened just before they switched the deal? Larry Page decided that all these mid-level, see, in the beginning when it was small, all the engineers worked for Larry and they do whatever he wanted. Then they had all these managers who were managing groups of engineers. And Larry said, you know, the engineers aren't working on the stuff that I think is important. I got all these managers in the way. He said, the problem with the company are the stinking managers. So he brought together all of the engineers and the managers. And he said, I just want to let you know that I'm firing all the managers. There were like 40 managers.
Good grief.
And he said, all these managers have been doing a bad job for this and this and this reason. And he just blasted them. And Larry Page doesn't have good people skills, so he actually couldn't even look at anybody when he was talking. And there was just like people said, this guy is like an idiot. What's going on here? So it turned out that one of the other divisions picked up all these managers for sales, moved them over to sales, you know, out of engineering, because Larry was all the engineering guys. So, but they were just shaking his head. And so finally, after this meltdown, they agreed. Page agreed to let Eric Schmidt become the CEO at Google. And that was in 2001. So this has a lot of the ring of what happened with Steve Jobs when he got kicked out of Apple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had all these, you know, VC guys, and they said, you know, this Steve Jobs doesn't know how to manage. And it turned out in the case of – and there's kind of a parallel here. In the case of Steve Jobs, people said, you know, he did need to be fired. He needed to be brought down a notch or two. And then during the 10-year hiatus when he went out and started Pixar and he reinvented himself, he matured and he became a very good manager. So when he came back to Apple, he was poised to take them to the next level. So Larry Page sort of had the same kind of deal. He wasn't prepared to run a big company.
Mm-hmm.
And so moving him out of this central role was very important. Like, for instance, Larry Page probably wouldn't have worried about making revenues on advertising, because that wouldn't have been important to him. So anyway, he ended up doing this, and he took it over, and Eric Schmidt took it over. Now Larry worked on the Android acquisition. Page didn't tell Schmidt about the deal, and it cost almost $50 million, and Eric Schmidt didn't know anything about it until the deal was done. And then he just turned this Android thing into a passion. He and Andy Rubin would spend time together, and it turned out to be a major thing. I mean, he also worked on Google Books. In his garage, he developed a thing that would turn the pages automatically. He worked on that. You know, the street view, he took his camera around the streets taking pictures all around to see whether he could patch that together, and he kind of invented the whole street view deal. I mean, he's an innovative guy. And as the comfort level with Schmidt increased because Google was making money, then Pages sort of receded further, and he worked on various other things and just let Schmidt do whatever he wanted to. Whenever Schmidt would hold meetings with his direct reports, the operation committee, Page would kind of sit up with his laptop and not say much unless Eric Schmidt would say, "Hey, okay, boys, what do you have to say?" And so then they'd give some input. Finally, after 10 years, Page was ready, and he felt that Google's not innovating enough. And so on April 4th of 2011, they brought him back as the chief executive officer at Google, and Schmidt stepped down to be chairman of the board. And many felt that Larry's 10 years in the wilderness matured him. He's a visionary who wants to change the world, but now, this is the important thing, now he knows how to delegate.
There you go.
And now he knows how to run a large organization.
There you go.
As of October 2012, the Bloomberg Billionaires Index lists him as the 27th richest man in the world with a net worth of $21.1 billion. So that's, there you go. All you want to know about Larry Page.
That's not as much as a Google. Now, a Google, G-O-O-G-O-L,
okay,
is a 1 followed by 100 zeros.
Okay.
Known on the short scale as 10 duotrigintillion, or on the long scale as 10,000 sextillion.
10,000 sextillion.
Sextillion,
okay.
So that's more than you needed to know there. Hope you're paying attention to everything except that last tidbit. The pop quiz is next. This is Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2. Be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University, changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
And now it's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome back to the classroom of the airways,
yes,
also known as a radio show.
I don't have time to put up a fight today.
I know. Earlier in the show, we talked about Larry Page, who, of course, is the co-founder of Google and inventor of the page ranking system. When he was working on the project at Stanford, it had a nickname. While it was a secret project, what was the name of his search program while he was a graduate student at Stanford? And he renamed that program Google when he started the Google search company. If you get the right answer to that, you win two tickets to fine dining, the Escoffier Dining Room or the Carême Dining Room. And we'll get those tickets out to you next week.
All right, so in order to play the game, you need to call us right now. If you're calling from east of Lansing, Michigan, it's 877-936-9333. It's 9333. I added too many threes. If you're calling from west of Okemos, Michigan, it's 877-936-9333. The wild card line for everybody else is 877-936-9333.
And, of course, if you're calling from Siberia, you can simply use Skype. Simply connect to Tech Talk Radio 1, and that will be forwarded to the studio free of charge.
Thank you for that that help.
And that will not be filtered or caught by Putin.
No, and you don't need to change your SIM card.
No, you don't have to change your SIM card at all.
Okay.
Okay, the Code Academy has gotten a major, major redesign. Now, Code Academy is a great way to learn how to program. It was launched 2 years ago. Now it has more than 24 million users who are learning how to code, but now it's getting a facelift. The New York City startup unveiled a new website, which would make Code Academy easier to use for newcomers, and it'll make the site more useful for existing users. It's updating its training platform to guide members through lessons and giving them lots of hands-on time with code. In the first example of this new experience, there's a lesson that guides HTML newbies through a series of steps in creating the Airbnb's website, which is, a very popular website for renting things online. Now, the new lesson experience will be launching this week, and it's part of the overall redesign. Code Academy focused on 10 major design principles in its new look, including using single columns whenever possible, highlighting the progress made by other members of the site, not forcing people to fill out a bunch of forms. Like, here's one example. One woman who was in the 50s was laid off from her secretarial job. She went to Code Academy, just started learning how to use code. Based on what she learned on the Code Academy site, she landed a job as a web administrator after only a few months of training. Hmm. I think this is a great way for people to transition into this. Tommy Nicholas, co-founder of Knox Famous, started his coding skills from Code Academy to build Coffitivity, which was named as the Time Magazine's top 50 websites. They've simplified the process. I recommend that you go to Code Academy as a way to start your coding career if you're really interested in it, to decide whether this is what's right for you. They recently got $12 million from Kleiner, Perkins, Caulfield, and Byers. The VC guys are trying to somehow make money out of this.
All right, we got somebody on the phone. We got to act fast here. This is Lewis calling from Rockville, Maryland. Lewis, good morning and welcome to Tech Talk. How are you, sir?
Good morning, sir.
Earlier in the show, we talked about Larry Page, the co-founder of Google. What was the nickname of the Google search algorithm before they started the company?
Backrub.
You are correct. Correct. You win two tickets to Fine Dining, the Escoffier Dining Room. Stay on the line. We'll get those tickets out to you next week.
Thank you, Lewis. Hang on. Andrew will be right with you. Okay, Doc, we only have just a few seconds left here.
Okay, how can you reduce
the
number of ads in Gmail? And you can't stop Google from scanning your inbox, but you can certainly keep from getting too many personalized ads, and they've updated their terms of service. Now, if you want to change how you get the ads, you can go to the gear in the upper right-hand corner, then click on Settings. And you scroll down to something called Important Signals for Ads, and you click on your preferences here, and this takes you to the Google Ad Settings, and you can scroll down to the opt-out, and you can opt out for interest-based ads. Now, if you've ever noticed, there's kind of a banner at the top of the mail. You can get rid of that by simply going to Settings and then click on the Web Click tab and uncheck the box where it says Show My Web Clicks, and you'll be all set. I tell you, this show just went by so fast.
Screamed by
so fast. We had a great time. We love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. Go to Apple iTunes, look at the podcast, or go to techtalkonline.com to sign up for the podcast. And if you go to the Stratford University website, stratford.edu, tell them you heard about them on Tech Talk.
Thanks for listening. If you tuned in late or would like to hear the show in its entirety again, it'll replay today at 6 in the evening. See you next week.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
And we have baseball on the radio today. The Nats and the Pirates after the, rather the Padres after the Nats stomped the Padres yesterday at Nats Park. Game time here at 105 First Pitch, the pregame with Charlie and Dave at 1230 here on Federal News Radio. Great day for baseball or anything else outside. Sunny and ice, mid-70s for the high right now. 63 outside our studios in Northwest D.C. It is 10 a.m.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers.